So Sean is going to give us a bit of a talk on stuff that involves quantum and relativity, and that's my understanding. Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully, yeah. Okay. So, and it is something to do with what Sean does some research on. So he's grappling with some of these very same issues. So let's give Sean a nice welcome. So I was working on some stuff. Actually, it was good yesterday. I got to talk to some of you guys after and during dinner, and so I got some ideas, more things that are at least what you guys might be interested to hear about. So I have like a bunch of things to say. I'm hopefully going to talk about. Actually, well, why don't I write down an outline? First, I'm going to talk about classical physics, and I know that's not anything you guys want to hear about physics. But it's going to, I think, a very different way of thinking about classical physics, and that'll make it very easy to talk about both generalistic and quantum mechanics. So in my opinion, it's a very beautiful way of thinking about classical physics. And then talk a bit about general relativity. So hopefully we'll build up a model that general relativity will just make a lot of sense. Because a lot of people say you can't understand general relativity unless you know math. But actually, you can get a very good, if you use non-Newtonian mechanics, you can get a very good understanding of what general relativity is physically. Then quantum mechanics, and then problems. So I want to kind of present this as if, all right, so these are things that we know. They're very well tested. These are two theories, general relativity, quantum mechanics, classical mechanics. They're very well tested theories. Nevertheless,
of everything else.
That's right, yeah, it certainly is a special case. It's a little familiar with it. But so you're in high school right now, or you guys, some of you have just finished going to university. What I'm trying to say is, what is the framework? What kind of variables do you use? What's the whole idea behind doing physics or classical physics? Anyone have ideas? I asked this question to my first year physicists.
Yes. At a scale where quantum and relativistic effects can ignore. So like our...
Yeah. I'm not saying what is the difference between classical and what is the point of physics? Let's put it a different way. Yeah.
To understand motion.
To understand motion. Yeah, that's good. That's what is motion?
Physical quantity? Physical
what? Some sort of physical quantity, so quantity. I think anyone have other ideas?
Objects interact
with each other. Yeah. So sometimes I try to summarize. say, like, physics is about predicting the future, right? If you know what's going on now, it's about predicting the future. But more specifically, what do you want to do? You want to set up coordinates, right? What's the first thing that you write down in physics? F equals ma, right? What does that mean? It means that there's a d by dt term in there. So there's a t, there's an x, there's an m, there's all kinds of other things. So first you set up, you have coordinates, you have positions of particles. And then you try to see how those positions change in time. So if you know where everything is at a particular instant, you can use these equations to predict what's going to happen in the future, right? So that's based, I think that summarizes, I guess, what you guys all beautifully know, we're sort of saying, which is true, right? But we can make that formalism even more specific, and we can say, imagine there's a new type of space. It's not. Maybe more simplistic, like, so Einstein has a light clock and anywhere in the open floor. Actually, clocks are very important, right? Their relativity to be very specific. So what's a clock or anything that can just measure the lapse time? Yeah. But what does that mean? What does that mean in terms of this picture, right? So far I've given you a completely timeless picture. The universe is a curve on the space of all possible nouns. The space of all possible nouns is only different configurations of things. This is telling you where things are in space. So there's no information about time whatsoever in this picture. It's totally timeless. So if that's true, then what is time? Yeah.
Is it the measure of the rate of change of where things are located?
Yes. I mean, you can definitely think of it that way. But even a more simplistic view of that, close the distance between two points on the line. That's a possibility. That's certainly a possibility. Now, the distance between two points in a line, maybe you're not there yet in mathematics, but if you have a curve, you can parameterize the curve, right? So you can pick an x, and you can parameterize it by something that you call t. And you can pick all kinds of parameterizations. The most natural one, typically, is the length. Yes.
So if that's parameterized, do we know the curve is continuous?
Yes, it's continuous. Well, in classical physics, we have continuous curve, yeah. This is a continuous curve. So, what am I trying to say? Okay, you know, x, so time is a parameterization, but there's no unique way to parameterize, right? So for example, I can parameterize this curve with a length. I can parameterize it with, I can pick one of these coordinates. So let's say the position, so you know, Sean's position. So I can use my own position to parameterize the curve. So I can stick x of, you know, x Sean in here. And that would be sufficient to parameterize the curve. I can just pick one of these coordinates. I can pick all kinds of other things. It turns out that Newtonian time is not any of those things. It's not the length. It's not the a particular coordinate. But it's related to the length. It's related to the length for some funny formula. It doesn't really matter. So I'm just mentioning this because it's interesting, not because it's related to anything else. But so I'm still going in order. So the parameter that you pick is called time. It's very special. And it's the parameter that you pick that allows you to build the box. So let me explain what I mean by that. And it's clocks that all give the same time. That's the key thing. So imagine if I have the real world, okay? So this is real space. And the real world is divided into two systems, S1 and S2. And there's a bunch of particles in S1, and there's a bunch of particles in S2. Then the idea is, can I use this as a clock, you know? Could this be my little clock that has air, two hands? So you can see what happens. This abstract system I'm identifying as a clock. So that thing on the wall over there is a clock. And it has a property that it's somehow not interacting very strongly with this other system, so that there's not a lot of friction or other terms that might slow this clock down for some reason. Okay. So this splits your space of all possible nouns. It splits your configuration space into two directions. So imagine that I can draw a line over the whole thing, and that's my third system, which is both systems put together. So this is the space, this is the thing for the whole system. Then this thing splits into two directions. One direction is system one, and the other direction is system two. Okay. So if I draw my curve here, I don't want to spend too much time on this. But this is sort of my view of physics, x of t. What I want is I want a parameter that if I project this in this direction, okay, I get sort of an x of t, but this is like the projected guy. Then I have a sort of separate configuration space of all possible nouns, just for the S2. As if the S2 thinks he's the only thing. This system is maybe think of it as an isolated system. So it's like an island in a big universe, right? And it doesn't feel anything else. Then this guy might think that he's the only, that this is the whole universe and that this thing doesn't exist. And then he might say, well, this is my physics. My physics is this line that goes like this. And then I invent a parameter that I want to call T. And I want to use that to parameterize my history. And the point is that the Newtonian time happens to be the same time that this parameter winds up being the same parameter here. So if I take this and I project it down, I get the exact same value here. That's the nice thing about the Newtonian time. If I use the length, there's no guarantee that the length of this curve is going to be is going to match up with the length of this curve, which is projected down. But the way that the Newtonian time works is exactly like that. So that's why the Newtonian time is really special. Okay, does that make sense? That's why Newton's theory is so nice. There's less time. Does that make sense? Okay. So I work with this philosopher in the UK, and he calls this a marching in step criterion. That the time is the unique parameter that marches in step. The clock here will march in step with the clock over there. Yeah. Good question.
forgot.
Okay, so this be from this perspective, what we would be in system one, and then the thought would be in system two.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So the idea is like, can I use? Basically, it's like this: if I'm in system one, can I use system two as a clock that will tell the time? But that time will work for me as well as the clock, as you know what I mean. So there's sort of a global parameter that's parameterized. This is a time that works for everything in the universe. But can I measure that time with a clock? And that's the only time that works that way properly is the time that Newton came, which is it's basically just the length. So T Newton is equal to the length divided by the potential. Okay. Potential energy. So if you use this definition, then you get, then everything works out. So I don't want to linger on that, but I do want to come back to time, because time is really important. Okay, so that's why I spent some time. All right, a few moments. Okay, so, great. But in general, just think of time as some label, this curve, okay? Now, so the next question is, this question was asked to see what is physics, specifically what is classical reality. And my next question right now is what is physics? Okay. So what is physics? So reality is just, is some curve.
It's the study of what reality might be.
So big yes. Another way of putting that is, what is the shape of this curve? And we know that time is just a label. So reality is just some curve. Time is just a label of that curve. But physics is telling you what is the shape. So now we have to come up with laws to tell us the shape of this curve. What do you think the most natural law would be? Time is 4. Well, we already know that time is 4 because it has to start. We actually don't know that from the screen. We can put that in by hand. Okay, that's a good idea. Time is 4. Actually, yeah. I'll put a little arrow with it.
If the laws of physics remain consistent throughout the curve.
Yes. But if we just define the law of physics for this whole configuration space, and that will guarantee it. Yeah. No, that's good. That's a good point. What would be a good law? What would be a natural shape? So suppose I had a space of all possible mass, and I start here, and I know that I start here, x initial, and I know that I end here. How am I going to get from here to here?
Straight line.
There you go. That's classical physics. almost, because I haven't talked about forces yet. So, but that's the answer, okay? So, in order to get from x initial to x final, you have to go through the shortest distance. And as you know, if the space of all possible nouns is flat, then the shortest distance is just going to be a straight line. And this is equivalent to Newton's first law, or whatever it is, that for objects free of forces will continue in a straight line. It ends up being equivalent to that. Great. But now I need to talk about what are forces. So what do you think forces would be? How would you be able to take into account forces in such a model? Yeah.
Are those things that bend?
That's right. Okay, so at the end of the day, a force is going to cause a bend. But we still want this principle to be true. We still want to take the shortest distance. So how can you have the shortest distance be a curved line? What would that imply? Yeah,
you can curve the...
That's right. So forces are curvature on configuration space. So the forces means that there's a bending in the space of all possible amounts. So the metric you define is curve. So this is curvature of the configuration space, this thing. And you say, well, I thought general relativity was supposed to be so interesting because there's curved space time and stuff. But actually, for a long time, even before Einstein, people knew that you could treat physics as a curved configuration space. All right, so the picture is now, okay, let me try to draw configuration space in some curve like this. And this is my x initial, and this is my x final. And now I go like that. And maybe the thing that's causing this bump is that there's some, presence of an electric charge. I don't want to write it because this is not real space. It's configuration space. But the fact that there's a gravity somewhere is causing this to be curved this way. Right? Does that make sense? Good. So that's classical physics. So the only thing we need to know is actually how the forces curve the configuration space. It's not that complicated, but I'm not really gonna talk about it all that much. If you want me to go into that, because that's not a huge deal. So the next step is, before I want to talk about general relativity, I just want to say one thing that's really important. I talk about symmetries. Okay, the symmetries play. Whenever you have a symmetry, okay. So the next question is, what is a symmetry? I love how there's so many. What about this one?
Top middle.
So the last question is, what is a symmetry? So what's a symmetry?
Yeah, maybe do something without changing it.
That's right. So it's two configuration. Yeah. So you change something, but something else doesn't change.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can do different things. So yeah, there can be discrete symmetries and there can be continuous symmetry. So a discrete symmetry would be like take a mirror image or something, and it looks the same. Now, in the real world, you can get symmetries. Imagine that I have my good old triangle. Okay, and these are particles with different coordinates. And then I just rotate triangle. So I rotate it over to a new position. I'll call it the O position. Okay. So I just rotate it. If I'm inside this triangle, if I'm one of these three particles in my fictitious universe, how can I tell that this rotation happened? Can I do an experiment that would tell me that I've just rotated my entire system? No. So that's an example of a continuous symmetry. So it's a symmetry where I can rotate an infinite amount of angles, and I haven't changed the physical situation. So what it actually means is it means that I'm not very clever. That I've tried to parameterize my world in terms of coordinates. Right? So the answer is that my coordinates are redundant. So they're ambiguous. Many different combinations of coordinates lead to the same physical situation. Okay. And the way that the picture that I want to draw here is, again, I have a space of all possible nows. Okay. And then I have my curve. But then what I want to say is there are slices. There are little foliations that are all represent the same physical state. So this could be, this point here could correspond to the first configuration, this guy. And this guy might correspond to the second configuration. But they're equivalent because all I've done is a rotation. Does this sort of picture make sense? I know this is probably easy for you guys to think about configuration space instead of real space. But each point here is a different set of coordinates. And going from here to here is just like doing a rotation. But we just sort of realize that a rotation is a symmetry. A rotation is something that doesn't affect the physical state of the system. So all that means is that I have all these curves on my configuration space that all represent the same system. So what do I do? Does that make sense before I move on? Yeah? Next question.
You said what did you do?
Pardon?
You asked what do you do?
Okay, so what do you do? What do you do when you have these kind of ambiguous coordinates?
Can you switch them together?
Pardon?
Can you switch them together?
Switch them together? So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you can kind of pick one. Yeah, so the switching them together would be, okay. I'm just not that clever, right? I just picked a bad set of coordinates. So instead of using these coordinates, why don't I use the distance between the points instead? Those are going to be physical, right? But it turns out it's actually really hard to take physics that way. Even you write down equations that way, you get crazy answers. And in general relativity, we don't even know how to deal with it at all. So it turns out that these are called gauge theories. Okay. So this is a gauge theory. So you might have heard of gauge theories before, but in popular science reading.
Yeah,
I'm still talking about classical mechanics, and now we've hit all of these really deep things. Okay. This is a gauge theory. So Newtonian physics is a gauge theory. They don't say that ever in school, or probably you might not know it unless you thought of it on your own. But Newtonian mechanics is a gauge theory. Okay, that doesn't matter. All it means is that we have these symmetries, and we have to find ways to deal with them. So what was I going to say? It turns out every theory that we have of physics is a gauge theory. For some reason, we're not clever enough to be able to write it in terms of the real physical quantities that are changing. Instead, we need to use these redundant coordinates. So I don't know. Is there something deep there? I don't know. Why is it like that? I have no idea. Maybe these are questions that need to be solved.
What's a gauge theory?
It's just a theory that has a symmetry in it, like this. That's all. Sorry. I said the name was pretty minor. Yeah, it's just a theory where you have to deal with these symmetries. And so whenever you have a symmetry, you do the same thing. So I ask, what do? Well, one answer is you can solve the truth. You can squish it down, solve the truth. But there's actually another strategy that is not as clever, but actually is what we wind up doing. Okay, then you guys don't have any other guesses. I'll just tell you. So how do we deal with them? Basically, what you do is you say, when I want to compare two different shapes, two different configurations, what I do is I suppose I have my O instant, and then some later time, these particles could be somewhere over here, and I want to compare them. What I do is I rotate them, and I translate them. So I try to apply all the symmetries that I can until I can minimize the distance between them. So the delta x min. So I have this like chi squared function, which is the sum of all of the delta x's. So there's like this delta x, particle one, this delta x. And I add them all up. And then I square them, and I take the square of the root, and then I minimize them. Okay? So I try to minimize this quantity, and it's like you're shifting. And then once it's minimized, then you can compare the two shapes. And that's something called mismatch. But it's also equivalent to what people do in gauge theory. But I like the best matching is essentially physical way. You're just doing this minimization. So that's how you deal with symmetries. Okay? When you guys learn this in undergrad or grad school, it'll look very different. I guarantee that. But maybe one day you'll remember this picture. Any questions? Okay, so now I'm going to go into general relativity. It's going to not take very long because I've actually built up almost everything. Yes?
How do you calculate?
How do you calculate it?
Yeah, like what factors affect it?
Pardon?
What factors affect it?
So really, I guess maybe I should be a bit more clear. What I'm actually saying is, suppose I have two slices like this, and I want to try to find the distance between them, right? I need to know the distance between them because I need to find the shortest curve, right? But I'm not sure if I have a sample that's from here, if I'm comparing two things that are on different parts of the slice, right? So that's what I do, is I use best matching to try to move them this way until they're matched up. See, because I don't want to just take this distance, I want to take the sort of shortest distance.
So you're kind of moving along the symmetry lines.
And you actually have to invent new fields to allow you to move back and forth. Those are called gauge fields.
It's because that lines you.
It's because you're trying to be consistent. You're trying to use a consistent principle to be able to tell, to be able to figure out what the real distance is between these configurations. See, you can see what I mean. There's an ambiguity here. I have this guy here and this guy here, but all of these guys are equivalent.
Yeah, so they're so much shorter this way.
Right. So how do I know the distance between them? That's ambiguous as well. So I need to invent a principle to be able to tell me what how to deal with, how to find the true shortest distance. And that's what the best match does. Yeah.
Sorry, is this actually what's represented by the subspace?
Okay.
So when you're drawing lines between points, you're connecting two different.
It's a different type of distance than the distance you're used to, yeah. Like, when I say distance, I mean distance on this weird space. Right? It's not the actual distance between us. It's the distance between configurations. Basically, it's a measure of how different two shapes are.
These aren't all possible configurations, or they are?
The collection of all points in this space is a collection of all possible configurations in the universe. But not everything happens, right? So what we do is we pick a line on that space, and that tells us what the history of the universe is.
I guess the thing I'm having a hard time even believe is if there's history occurs over different nows, right?
Right. So you're thinking, can we come back to the same point on configuration space?
But like, no. If every point in that space is a particular now,
yeah.
How does it represent the whole history of the universe if the history of the universe is succeeding now?
That's why I said it's that the history is actually a line in space. It's a line of the particular order, right? So you start from here, and then you go along, and then you move over to here. And that's your history. So, I mean, you could potentially come back to the same point, and then come back here. That causes some trouble, but you just have to be careful. You can do that. I don't want to linger on this, because there's other things I want to say, but I could definitely talk some more about it. So, you have a question?
Wouldn't this imply that time is discrete rather than smooth?
Not necessarily. I don't see how.
Because you're moving between nouns, and then you're saying that.
So then you sort of take the limit where this is getting infinitesimally small. You do it in calculus. Yeah. So somehow you're going continuously between these different nouns. Okay. Let me go on, because I do want to get to general relativity, and I do want to get to quantum mechanics. Quantum is going to be really, really straightforward. I just need to talk a little bit. I mean, we're almost at general relativity, to be honest. But this is 2gr. I just have to tell you what the fundamental variable. See, in Newtonian mechanics, in Newtonian mechanics, we have these coordinates, okay, the positions of the particles. Those are the fundamental variables. In general relativity, the fundamental variables are not coordinates of particles, they're actually the shape of the space-time, and usually we label that by these variables g for the metric, right? And I'll explain in a second what the metric is. But it's just going from fundamental variables, which are coordinates, to other new types of variables that represent the geometry, the space of the shape of space. Okay. Let me get to what this is. In general relativity, there's three levels of structure. Okay. The first level is the topology. And the topology, so right now we're talking about just the shapes of objects, okay? And space happens to be an object, or the fundamental object. But these new things is, what is the shape of space-time? So what I'm talking about right now is just going to be shapes of things, okay? And I'm going to use examples that we know of. For example, the topology is something that you can't change without stretching or without tearing. You can't change just by stretching. You can only change it by tearing the object. Okay? So you can't change by stretching. So let me give you examples, and hopefully it'll become very clear. So I can take a ball, okay, and I can flatten it. Okay? And if I flatten it, it'll look like a disc. Right? Now, this is obviously a different object. It's a different shape. I've changed the shape of the object. But I haven't changed the topology. Okay? The topology of these two things is the same. I can also take the disk and I can turn it into a bowl. Right? I can just flatten it and then push it down and I can mold it into a bowl. Right? Again, these all have the same topology, but they're not the same shapes. However, if I puncture a hole into the disk, if I cut a hole in it, then I change the topology. Right? So the topology is talking about things that properties like holes. Okay? So the sphere is not the same as a sphere with a hole essentially. Okay? And I can take that hole and I can make it bigger, right? So this is non-equivalent, but I can make it bigger and I can have, this kind of object like this. Now, just to be clear again, I'm talking about the two-dimensional surfaces. I'm not talking about the three-dimensional ball. I'm talking about the surface that goes around the ball, okay? So now this thing has a hole in it. I can get here. So this is the same topology as this, but they don't have the same topology as this one. Okay? So now for maybe a slightly less trivial example, I'll put it up here. The sphere is not the same as a donut. Okay? A donut is not a sphere with a hole punched in it. Okay? Something different. It's a donut. And it has a different topology. But what I could do is I could stretch this. And you kind of have to use your imagination into a coffee cup, okay? And the coffee cup, what happens to this hole here? It turns into the hole in the handle. You see that? Right. The rest of it's just been flattened out. So that this property is called a handle. So a donut is an object with a handle. Okay. A sphere has no holes and no handles. It's as simple as topology you can have. Then you can have multiple handles. I can put like another handle here. That would be two handles. The types of topological invariants, topological properties, I'll say. You can have holes. You can have handles. You can have knots. You can have braids. You can have other stuff. models, right? So you can use your imagination to think about the chain reaction. Okay? That's the first structure. In general relativity, that's predetermined. Yes.
Wouldn't holes be the same as handles, or are holes just discontinuous?
No, they're really different. A hole is different than a handle.
So it would be like a point discontinuity on the surface?
That's right, yeah. You sort of move along, and then all of a sudden the mantle stops. That's a hole. It's a singularity. It's like a black hole. So when you find at the center, inside a black hole, you get past the horizon. Other questions?
Yeah? And in the ball, does like the edges of the ball have to be smooth?
In this case,
like a zero tangent or non-existent tangent there with that.
Yeah, if the corner is not smooth, then you have a divergence, but it's a divergence kind of derivative. I don't know if that's a topological property or not, I'm not an expert, but I think it might be. No, I'm not sure.
I watched a video about this, but yeah. I just want verification. Huh? It says that you can invert a sphere without making a hole in it.
That makes sense.
I don't know that.
I'm not an optician, so I don't know that. I'm kind of out of my depth a little bit here. But I just want to say this. In general relativity, the topology is predetermined. Okay. So there's general relativity says nothing about what the topology does in time. Okay. That's something that you actually have to put in by hand. In quantum gravity, maybe the topology is going to be a constant. So that's why I mentioned it. Now there's a second. So this is the first level of structure. The second level of structure is the thing that tells the difference between the bowl and the sphere and the disk, okay? And that's called the curvature. All right, so I think I saw actually a picture that was drawn on the board that I wanted to draw, and it was about what curvature is. But you guys have a basic idea of what curvature is, right? If I'm standing, basically curvature measures the sum of the angles of a triangle. Okay? So if I'm in flat space, and I add theta 1, theta 2, theta 3, if I sum all the thetas, it gives what? Yeah, 5. If I'm on a sphere, and I put a triangle, and I sum all the angles, what does it give?
More than pi.
Something greater than pi. And that's called positive curvature. So the letter we give for curvature is R. So for here you would say R is greater than 0. Okay. Then you can get these saddle surfaces, which I find really difficult to draw. They kind of go like this. That's pretty good. And then I put a triangle on this. Then I sum all the angles, and what does it give? Something less than pi. So the curvature here is negative. These are called negative curvature surfaces. Okay, so this is actually the level at which general relativity works. Okay. So this is the sort of true degrees of freedom. So these are the real things that are changing in time in general relativity world. Right? It's the curvature of space-time that is changing. Actually, sorry, it's the curvature of space that's changing in time. But unfortunately, there's a third level of structure in general relativity. And that's the one we actually work in. So the third level is coordinates. And that's the metric structure. So, to give you an idea of what this is, I can take a plane and I can put some coordinates on it. Right? So that these coordinates, if I'm here, then I have to go 3 units this way and 1 unit this way. Right? And that'll bring me here. But I can take the same plane. So exactly the same shape, it has exactly the same curvature, and I can draw crazy coordinates on it. As long as they know it's long the proper coordinates and they don't overlap. You know, I can do this, right? And they're still valid coordinates. I can still find any point here. I can say, well, this point here is 3 this way and 4 that way. 4 that way. You know, and I can still identify all the points on this plane as long as I draw enough coordinates. But these are crazy coordinates, and these are reasonable coordinates. But unfortunately, these guys are not the same in terms of our fundamental variables, which are the metric. Right? So the metric is just a set of coordinates. And so this could be what the world looks like to you if you're sitting here doing nothing. And this could be what the world looks like if you're going under some crazy trajectory. So what Einstein said is that that physics, so this is Einstein, so this physics should not depend on coordinates. And that's sort of the principle of relativity, I suppose. That's how it's formulated in general relativity. So it shouldn't depend on the coordinates. It should only depend, it should depend on curvature, so only on the curvature. So the curvature is something that is independent of the particular choice of coordinates getting along time. So I'm going to be able to finish GR, okay?
Is curvature changing by proportion?
Yes, so there's going to be four. So that's what I'm getting. So that's the picture I'm getting to right now. Okay. So great. Now we have enough information to understand what's happening in general. Okay. I'm going to have to rinse. So in GR, we have the space of all possible metrics, G, okay? So our fundamental variables instead of coordinates are these shapes, right? So you can think of them as shapes with coordinates on them, right? And you start here, the initial and the final, and then physics is just a trajectory from here to here, okay? So this is some G of T. But there are symmetries, okay? That's what Einstein said, that these two, even though the coordinates are not the same, they're representing the same physical situation. So what that means is that these guys, this is a symmetry, all right? So there are, so you have this curve like this, and then you have one coordinate system, coordinate A, and then you have coordinate B, you know, so this one could be B, and this one could be A, and, you know, going from here to here, instead of a rotation or a translation or something, this is a, this is just a coordinate transformation, or maybe it's an acceleration. Or maybe it's you've just gone to a different velocity. You've gone to a different frame of rest. Right? So that's what you mean by coordinate transformation. But these are all physically the same situation. And so the only thing that we're trying to do is figure out how to. So now we have the same problem where we need to be able to figure out the distance now. Because the physical law is going to be a straight line on this space. Right? But in order to do that, we need to know the distance, and we have this ambiguity. So that's why we do the gauge theory, or the best matching. You know, so we have one shape, and we have another shape, and we try to bring them as close as we can together. Yeah.
Sorry, it says physics should depend on curvature.
It should depend on curvature, but not on the coordinates.
So it's not mean each point on the dot has to depend on physics.
What I'm saying, no, every point along here has the same physics. But if I move this way, I'm moving to a different geometry. So if I move in this direction, I'm actually changing the shape. But if I move in this direction, I'm keeping the shape the same, but I'm just changing the coordinates. See how there's two different types of motion? And so we're trying to distinguish, people call this, this diagram that I drew is wrong. People usually call this, and it doesn't matter. There's two different types of motion, either in the direction of the symmetry or perpendicular to the symmetry. And we want to just write the laws in terms of the motion perpendicular to the symmetry. Right? That's the only difficulty. That's like all of the baggage of general relativity is in trying to do that. And you can summarize it with this fast matching thing. Or you can think of it as gauge theory. It's maybe more mainstream. and then the only thing you need to know is remember how there is forces, but this thing is curved. Well, they're not really called, you can't think of them as forces, but the forces of general relativity are actually just the curvature instead of the potential. And then you can put this arbitrary constant, which is called the cosmological constant. That's general relativity, yeah.
I'm sorry, just one more. Do we know all the curvature theorems? I mean, all the symmetries?
Yeah, well, we think we do.
And there's, no, how come we can't find the shortest?
We can. Well, that's the thing, is that, well, we, how come we can't solve for the true degrees of freedom?
Yeah.
Because it's too hard.
Oh.
Yeah. So am I running out of time? I just finished GR. But I think that's interesting enough. So, how much time do I have?
Oh,
awesome. So I can do quantum mechanics now. Okay, I can do good. So any questions about this? All right, so you can see that time is going to be the same thing, right? Time is just a parameter on here. So I want to write, this is really a crucial thing, is that time is going to be related to the length. Divided by r minus 2 lambda, but it's related to the length of this curve. It's a parameter that parameterizes this curve. Okay, does that make sense? Yeah.
So I just need to make sure this, when you use perpendicularly, you maintain the same physics?
When you use perpendicularly, you're getting a new physical situation. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the talking about symmetry is distracted. Like don't let the details about the symmetry stuff really pull you away. But it is important, right? Because this is Mach's principle. This is the thing that you hear people talk about. If you learn GR, like this is the thing that really motivated Einstein to call the general relativity. And then it turns out that he didn't really understand why it worked, but it did work. But we know now it's because of fast matching. And you'll never see this in a textbook. You'll never see this way of thinking about it in a textbook, unfortunately. Well, maybe soon, actually, but not right now. But this is really how you want to think about GR. Any questions? Okay. I'm going to talk about quantum mechanics. Yeah.
Which year of undergrads, if you go into theoretical physics, would you start getting into this kind of stuff?
Probably third year. Fourth year, maybe. I did in third year. Third or fourth year. And, you'll just learn what are the mathematics. See, I said that G, I just wrote G like this. You'll actually see precisely what this means and how to define it. But unfortunately, you won't get this picture. So it'd be really nice if you get the picture with the map, but it takes like, but I guess they figure you can get the picture yourself and you can put it long enough. For a long time, people didn't have good pictures about general relativity, so maybe that's why it's not in textbooks. Okay, but what I want to do now is talk quickly about quantum mechanics and the time I have left. This is probably good enough. I don't have to erase any things. This is literally going to take me 2 seconds. So what is quantum reality? So let's, you guys have done like a little quantum primer. So you know that the in quantum, the fundamental objects is a wave function. What does that mean? Okay, so here I have x, and so this actually applies to quantum gravity as well. See how similar these pictures are, this picture? So I may as well just put a g in here. Now I'm talking about quantum gravity. Doesn't make a difference. In quantum gravity, the fundamental object is this thing, g out, final, g initial. And this is the thing that we call the wave function. And it is equal to, if I take the square of it, it's the probability that I am in a state g final if I started in a state g initial. Okay, that makes sense? So that's what quantum mechanics tells you. So instead of saying, so in classical reality we have a curve, now the curve disappears. Okay. So in classical physics you start from some initial configuration and then over time you move into the final position. Okay. That was the picture we talked about originally. Does that make sense? I don't know. I know it's a weird way of thinking about things, but that's really what happens, right? You start off here and you evolve into this, you know, as time goes by. In quantum mechanics, it's not like that at all. The only thing you know is if I start here, what's the probability that I'm going to finish here? That's what the wave function is. You guys might be used to seeing it more, in which case you average over g initials. But this is really the object. Okay, this is a wave function. So it's a very different picture of the world, right? How do you calculate this probability? Well, it's very straightforward. You just sum you take a particular, let me just write an arbitrary curve. This might not be the shortest distance between two points. Just an arbitrary curve, I'll call it gamma. Okay. So what I'll do is I'll take E and I'll put an I, or that's square root of minus one, and I'll put an H bar because it's quantum mechanics. And then I'll multiply it by the length of gamma. Okay. And then all I do is I sum over all possible gammas that start here and end here. So I take this one, and I take this one, you know, gamma prime, and I take this one, gamma double prime, and I add them all together. And I do it in just this way, and it gives me the wave function. That's quantum mechanics. Done. Right? Yeah?
How can I add infinite things?
Sorry?
How can I add infinite gammas? Is it kind of number of gammas or the one?
It's the sum is infinite.
So how can I sum it?
Carefully.
I mean,
you have to be okay. So let me. So really, the way you do it is break this up into a grid, right? And then you just. Then it's easy, right? You can just go through all possible grids. And then that's a simple sum to do. And then you just take the limit by the grid size, delta x, goes to zero. And then you're supposed to converge on an answer. And if you're lucky, you'll get a finite answer. If you're not lucky, you get infinity and you have your normalization. So it's not a trivial. Like, it's not a simple sum to do. And it's not always clear that sum exists, but that is in typically the way that you actually do it. Okay.
What's the point?
Sorry.
What's the point of finding itself?
What's the point? Because you add up all these quantities, and it tells you that if I start my system in this state. I need to calculate all this, and I know the probability that if I do a measurement, I'll wind up in this thing. And that's quantum mechanics. So that's it. So actually, we've done all the math. I mean, of course, you have to actually do the sum, and that's hard to do. But This is the mathematical. I haven't even taken it. I've been completely rigorous in writing this down. I haven't hidden anything from you. But then it says that, so if I start in, you know, G initial, then so probability, this thing, is equals the probability of finding a being in G final after a measurement. Okay? So that's so there's two laws of quantum mechanics. Well, there's a law of quantum mechanics, but you can think of quantum mechanics as two things. One is a formula for calculating this wave function, and two is interpreting what the wave function means. Alright? So if you believe these two things, then you don't need to know anything else for quantum mechanics, right? Yeah.
The way when you put G final on the line G initial, is that a division? Is it getting there? What does that mean?
Oh, sorry, where are you? Where?
The brackets, and then
here?
You squared it.
I put a line here.
Yeah.
That's just notation.
So what does that mean?
Oh, and it's just another way of writing. It's just actually because this particular, see how there's eyes over here? When I do this, so actually it's this thing is equal to this. Okay. So this is gonna be a complex number. And what I need to do is I need to square it to get a real number. Actually, not square, but whatever it's, the thing is, complex conjugate times. You get, you take that, and that gives you the probability. Okay, so the object, the wave function is, this isn't just a symbol, okay? This is just another way of writing this. Okay? So this thing, when I square it, is equal to the probability. So if you want, like, you can ignore this. This is another way of saying these words. I guess. Okay. So yeah, don't worry about the limitation. Okay. This is getting tired. But I'm at the punchline right now, which is remember I thought quite a bit about time as being a parameter? And I said that the time is proportional to the length, and I made a big deal about that. Well, what happens to time in this picture? Yeah. Sorry. Well, there's many to pick from, right? Because you can see what's happening is that in the classical world, there's one particular path that has the minimum length. And so when h bar is really small, this sum is going to turn into just one term, which is the length that is minimum, right? And so that's why classical physics is the shortest distance, okay? Because it's this term dominates, because it's special. It's the shortest length. But in quantum world, in quantum mechanics, it's not just the classical path that happens. All of these things are superimposed on top. All of the possible realities are superimposed on top of each other. Every different path going from here to here is superimposed in this sum. Okay, and so the problem is now I don't have a unique link pick, right? Because I have infinitely many. So I have a superposition of infinitely many paths. Each one of them probably has a different length. So I get infinitely many paths. So what we call a superposition, that doesn't matter what it's called, superposition of paths. And the result of that is when you apply the standard rules of quantization to the gravitational field, where time is defined like this, time disappears from the equations. So that's called the problem of time. And for some strange reason, the notion of time breaks down in quantum mechanics.
Yeah. Isn't it like possible to consider apps that speak in progress? Is it even possible to consider apps that go like all the way out?
Yeah, that's in quantum mechanics. There's a very small contribution to the wave function from that path, which is also one reason why quantum mechanics is so non-local, or is non-local. Even though we can't use that path to communicate information faster than the speed of light. So that's a problem of time. So no one's coming in here, so I may as well mention another problem, which is. Are you guys saturated? Are you guys done?
No.
Okay. All right. So you can see there is a solution to this. Okay. You can say that that there's a clock outside of this that is a external clock. It's like a Newton God clock. In which case there's a real T that God comes in and tells you, someone outside the system. Comes in and tells you how much time has gone by, then you can solve the problem. So that's really the only way to deal with the problem of time and quantum gravity. But we still don't know exactly how to do it properly. Now, of course, you can't do that if you're doing cosmology, right? Because in cosmology, there is no external clock. There shouldn't be any clock external to the universe. So you run into a problem. So a lot of these problems happen when you consider the universe as a whole, when you're trying to do quantum mechanics of the whole universe. There's also so I mentioned these two problems. The first one is the problem of time. And the second one is the measurement problem. And hopefully I can talk a little bit about that. So I told you that there's two types of things going on in quantum mechanics. One is there's this equation here that's telling me how to calculate the wave function. And then there's the interpretation of that equation, which is that I make a measurement. So I was talking to a couple people about this yesterday. And I asked, okay, well, there's an obvious question here. What is a measurement? Right? So measurement is a very important word, even though you can't even read it, but I wrote it so small. I hate writing words in the book, I like it, it's better. But measurement is a crucial part of quantum mechanics. So the main object that you have is telling you, if I do a measurement, what's the probability that if I start here, I'm going to end up here? Now, suppose I do a measurement, okay? Then I find a particular value. I wind up in this state. My wave function goes from being something to something completely different, almost instantly, or not instantly, as I do the measurement. So clearly, a measurement is a very important process. So who is allowed to do a measurement? Right? We're asking you guys. I'd like to know. What? Sorry?
Yeah.
I've got, what is that? Oh, God. Yeah, God can do it. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's actually the answer that you wind up getting to, right? You start by saying, okay, a physicist can build an apparatus and you can make a measurement with it, right? Yeah, or you can build a clock and you can use that to measure the time, right? Or so I can prepare some random quantum system and I can take a device and I can measure it. But the thing is you say, well, the device is going to be big. It's macroscopic. The quantum system is small. It's microscopic. So a measurement is when a big macroscopic system interacts with a small microscopic system. Then you say, well, isn't that large macroscopic system really just made up of atoms and small things? Isn't it just the limit of some quantum mechanical world? And then you realize that it should just be this type of evolution, but really you just have two quantum systems interacting. I don't know if I'm making myself clear. Maybe I should draw more pictures. I should have prepared a slide for this one. I didn't know if I would get to this, but what I'm trying to say is, first, this is what quantum mechanics is, and then I'm saying this is what's weird about it. And so you guys are still trying to get used to the first thing, and I'm already telling you that first thing is weird and wrong. but that's the weird thing about quantum mechanics, is that, let me just start, in order to define a measurement, you need to arbitrarily say, look, this physicist, Richard has the ability to make a measurement. Once he does that, then he can use these rules to calculate the probability. But that's not something that's well defined in theory, because then you could treat Richard F as a quantum mechanical system. And then who does a measurement on him? Well, it's someone external to that. Right? And then you keep going and you have some so what I'm saying is that the observer plays exactly the same role as the external clock. Okay? And the same situations that allow you to have a clock are the things that allow you to have a measurement on the clock. So it could be that the problem of time and the measurement problem are connected. So hopefully this just sparks your interest and gets you interested in reading about the measurement problem, because it's really, really a deep problem. It's been around since the very beginning. I remember I read something where Einstein, the first week or so that he heard about this, he said, look, your observer plays a preferred role in the theory, and this is not a good theory. And since then, nobody has been able to give a consistent answer to that objection. And the fact that it's related to this disappearance of time is really interesting, I think. So coming back to my original thing that I said was that, we have these two theories. So far, they've never given any more predictions. But they have these really deep conceptual problems that have the two being related. And also, we have this big thing called quantum gravity, which we don't know how to solve yet. Could it be that we have to rethink fundamental principles of our theories in order to get a consistent picture that will allow us to quantize gravity? Yeah.
When you say the problem of time, I assume you're not just talking about three equations that are going to cancel out time. So if it was that case, you would probably be okay just to ignore the time. So what's going on that the time is being canceled out that you're not okay with?
Well, the time is dropping out because you have this superposition of clocks. And the thing that you used to identify as time is now ambiguous. And so what happens is you kind of average out time in the equations. It's hard to actually connect what's happening in the equations to this physical picture. Actually, no, I have a paper on it. All right, do exactly that. But not for general relativity, for the simpler part of the less general relativity, for the simpler part of the case. Now, I should say that time is a little bit more complicated than general relativity. There's a couple of details that I forgot that I didn't forget that I didn't want to mention. But still, that's one of the big issues is that you've got all these superpositions now on the clock. And there's an ambiguity. You don't know how to deal with it. And at the end, your equations are quite timeless. So
you're saying they're being kind of averaged out of the equation, but not in a way that it's still not mathematically correct.
It's totally mathematically correct. There's not a problem with the mathematics. There's a problem with physical interpretation. So I'm finished. I was just feeling like I should see you guys get that. So I guess, are there any more questions? Do we have time for anyone? One more question.
Make it a good one.
Let's be good. It doesn't have to be a good one.
They're all good.
Somebody says no. No questions? Okay. Let's thank Sean again.